What's up, heathens? It's Monica.
And Kristen.
And two special guests that we will introduce here soon. But first, I want to apologize because it is my fault, my heathen self, that we kind of skipped a week last week.
I mean, I think it's both of our faults. We were on vacation last week.
Had a hiatus, a little bit of sabbatical.
We were in the lovely Blue Ridge Mountains.
North Carolina.
It's very beautiful.
Very pretty. A lot of ghosty stories.
Yep.
Going around.
A lot of ghost tours and cabin happenings.
Yep. And
puzzles.
We had people yell at us from vehicles.
Yes.
About the coronavirus.
We watched somebody bust their tire out on a curb and then just keep driving.
At a red light. They were just zooming through.
Flat out bizarre.
It was beautiful, honestly.
I mean,
wonderful experience. 10 out of 10. Go to Asheville. That's what's up. Yeah. But today we're gonna talk about moral dilemmas, and I wanted to bring our special guests in to discuss it. I wanted it to be a fun conversation. So without further ado, we have with us Miss Sarah.
No, that doesn't feel right. Don't say that.
Ow.
Monica just got smacked in the head.
I don't know why I said your biblical name. Sorry. We have Jordan here. And this is my wife.
And we have my wife, Rachel.
And I thought it was important to bring them along, because they always call me out on my moral shit.
To be fair, the four of us have quite an eclectic mix of moral feelings. So we felt like this would be an interesting thing for the four of us to do. You guys can meet the wives and we can have lovely conversations. Now everybody is signing bad things to each other. You guys gotta like get it together.
I did.
All right. Jordan and Rachel, introduce yourselves. Say hello.
Hello. Oh.
This is just further proof that we are the same person.
Hello, I'm Rachel.
Hello, I'm Jordan.
Just so everybody who's listening can hear, Jordan looks the most uncomfortable.
She looks hello, like this is the most awkward recording experience ever.
She's red in the face like a beet, and it seems like she's like standing in front of a crowd, and she's like, I don't know what to do with my hands. All right, so I got the way we're going to do this is we're just going to kind of have a conversation about it, right? So I have 10 different moral dilemma questions for all of us, okay? And then what we're going to do is I'm going to ask one question, and I want us all to give our own answers. And if we have a conversation point or if we're all in unison, we can move on to the next. But if we all would like to discuss it and, you know, judge each other for each other's choices, that's also fun too. Sound fair?
I'm going to do a lot of judging.
That's fair. I would like to take a poll and just say that I feel that Rachel and I are going to be very similar in our answers. And I feel like Kristen and Jordan will be more similar.
No, I 100% feel like I'm going to be the odd man out.
No. 100%. You are the most lawful person, so I know you will be the odd man out.
Chaotic neutral over here.
I'm just evil.
But Jordan's like also like fucked up, so. She said herself earlier, she was like, I don't have normal moral opinions.
That's not even true at all, because she's totally like, save all the trees, save all the butterflies.
All right, let's get started and see how this goes.
All right, question number one. You guys ready? I think I'm going to start with Kristen first and then go Rachel and just kind of do a clockwise thing or a counter.
Let's do it.
Clockwise for you, counter for me. All right, so Kristen and everybody else in the room, I guess. Hello. You see someone drop a $20 bill on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
They're walking away. They have no notice in the world. And you have the opportunity to take it or give it back to them. What do?
I run them down. I chase them down, screaming, hello, sir, ma'am.
That's so fucking loud.
I'm sorry. I would legit run them down it to give them their money back. $20 is a lot of money. Even if it was a dollar, like, you never know. And also, it's their money. So I, like, if I saw who dropped it, and okay, I knew exactly who to turn it into, 100% I would give it back to them.
Okay. Rachel?
Ditto. So I would, like, run forward. I would, like, run forward, pick up that $20 bill, and be like, "Dear sir, madam, I have your monies." And I would chase after them. But, like, if it got to be difficult, like, if I had to run for a really long period of time. Oh,
my God. I was going to say, so, like, when you say chase them down, do you mean, like, get on the L train and take, like, three? Like, you are chasing them for a while. At this point, it's pretty much stalking.
No, I don't think if it came to that, that I would go that length unless it was a serious amount of money. However, the amount of guilt that I would feel if I was not able to return that money would be so overwhelming that I would have to figure out what to do with said money. I couldn't. There is no realm of possibility where I would take it and be okay with it.
Okay, Joe.
Wait. I ain't done. Okay. So I was saying, like, if I had to run for a really long length of time, or, like, they couldn't hear me or something like that, and, like, I just lost track of them, then I'm with Kristen. I would have to do something else with that money. I couldn't keep it. Most likely, I would, like, find somewhere to donate it or go buy lunch for some homeless people or something.
All right, Jordan. How do you feel?
I'm mumbling.
Okay. So, Joe, you see someone drop a $20 bill. All right. You have every chance to get up to them. They're running away a little quick. They're walking fast, whatever. You got short legs, whatever. You can get it back to them. Do you take it? Or no one, like, saw you pick it up? Nothing like that. Do you take it, or do you give it back to them?
You give it back to them. Obviously. I mean, I wouldn't, like, chase them down like Kristen, but I would definitely, like, timidly be like, "Excuse me, you dropped some money."
Wait.
Nobody saw me pick it up? There's no, like, chance of retribution?
No, seriously. No, exactly.
There's, I would still chase them down and try to give it back.
Okay. All right, before
that, I thought was going to a much worse place for a second. I was about to be upset with my wife.
Okay, so here's my thing. I agree with you. If it came to it and I had the opportunity, I would try to get it back to them. However, let me up the ante, because we live in 2020 and nothing is out of this realm. You walk up to them, you say, "Hey," you startle them, they pull out a gun. What do you do? Do you still try? I mean, like, at that point, to me, it's like the thought process of trying to do the right thing could land you into such a more perilous situation. Is it almost worth it to not try to put yourself in a situation like that?
10 times out of 10, I would pursue that person and give them their money back. If they pulled a gun on me, if they did not shoot immediately, hands would immediately go up. I would say, "Hey, man, you dropped some money, just trying to give it back to you." I would try to explain to them what was going on. But every single time I would choose to try to give them their money back, not knowing if they, you know, what the outcome is going to be. Because more likely than not, they're not going to pull a gun on you. They're going to be like, "Oh, thanks. It's $20.
Frick that. They pull a gun on me. I am screaming like a 2-year-old, dropping the money and running.
Okay, but that's not the question. The question is, would you still try to give it back to them if you thought that they would pull a gun on you?
Hell no, it's staying on the ground.
I would just like to say that, like, you can't live your life in fear of what people are going to do in response to that. Like, I'm not going to, like, just go around thinking the worst of everybody and being paranoid that if I try to return money someone dropped to them, they're going to pull a gun on me. So I'm with Kristen. 10 times out of 10. I'm going to try.
No, that was an extreme go-to. But you also got to think, okay, how flexible are people's morals? And that's what this whole questionnaire that I'm doing is about. So, like, putting your mind in that thing. As we go on, these questions I thought would be increasingly harder to discern. Like, of course, if somebody drops money, you see it, you can get it back to him. I think that the majority of people would be like, "Yeah, you know, it's the right thing to do. I'll give it back to him." The moral compass is clearly aligned in that regard. However, when situations evolve from just the black and the white and you hit that gray area, there's a lot more of bending that is going to happen to people's morals. So that's what I was trying to get you to think of. Like, at some point, what you think is just the straight shot answer, there's going to be things that happen that might add stress. I'm not saying people need to live in fear, but we also need to not think just situations are cut and paste. Like, there are different, I mean, it could be in a bustling street where the person is walking in the middle of the road. Do you run after them in the traffic? Like, you know, those kind of questions. Like, naturally, this is just a one kind of thing, and you could add a million different what-ifs to it, but just kind of getting your head in the headspace.
I feel like the question would be better asked if it was asked by saying, like, you know that they're going to pull a gun on you. Would you still return it?
Well, yeah, but everybody's answer would immediately be no.
No, I still would.
Okay, I'm going to go out to my car. I'm going to drop a $20 bill behind me, and I have a gun in my car. I'm going to pull it on you if you try to give it back. Would you try to give it back to me?
Yeah.
You know me. That's not a fair thing. Okay. We're moving.
No, but even if you were a stranger, I would.
Because
I feel like you could easily defuse that situation. You just be like, hey, look, man, you dropped a 20. I'm just trying to give it back to you. And you know what?
Somebody who has pulled a gun on you for tapping on the shoulder is easily.
You know what? If they killed me, then I died being a good Samaritan and a hero.
Ignorant.
Did everybody just hear that?
Ignorant.
I died a hero.
Fuck you. What the fuck?
What the fuck? Okay, all right. I think that was a good opener, right?
Good start.
You're right?
I'm a good person.
You are. You're a great person. You're going to die from being a great person.
Yes.
Okay. So, and this one has personally happened to me, and I know we've had kind of a conversation about it, so I feel it really important to put it in here because I thought it was a good idea. A store clerk doesn't charge you for a very, very expensive item. You don't realize until you get home. What do you do?
Oh, man. Joe, you gotta wait. I gotta think about this. 'Cause this situation happened to you guys. This has never happened to me. So No, I'm not gonna ask that question.
$500.
Like, I was undercharged $500?
$500.
Holy hell. Okay.
That is specifically what happened to me. $500.
Okay, I'm going to be completely honest here. The temptation would be very strong to not say anything. However, my guilt would win out. And I know that not paying that $500 for something that I should rightfully pay for could mean a negative impact for somebody else.
Let me also couple it by, again, saying off of a personal experience, the receipt that you have says $0. They charge, like, for what I'm talking about, I purchased an item online. Like, I put a down payment on an item online. I went and picked the item up in store, and I had only put that down payment on it. I had not paid off the full amount. I went to check out and pay the remainder off, and then it totaled zero as I left. And that's all she wrote. So I never ended up paying. I even waited to pull the money out of my account for a month. It never came out of my account. They totaled it out zero. I never got charged for it. So that's the kind of situation I'm setting you up for. You purchase this item online at a down payment. You go to the store to pay it off, pick it up. You go through the checkout process. You aren't charged.
And you didn't realize until you got home?
Didn't realize until you got home. You even looked at the receipt. It says that you had been totaled out, had 000 all the way across, that the account was closed, everything was good to go, never charged.
I think what I would do would, A, depend upon how much I was paying attention to what the original cost was. Because if I was not paying any attention, I probably wouldn't think anything of it. Because I would not think that somebody made a mistake. You know, like, let's say it was listed for $600. They only charged me $100. But I, for whatever reason, just wasn't paying attention. probably would never think anything of it. But if I noticed.
Yeah. No, you noticed. Because I mean, that's a very large sum of money to notice. Like, I would have.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that sum of money is not something I have hanging around in my bank account all the time. I got bills. But, like, so it was originally marketed at $600. I put a $100 down payment. $500. Not charged.
I would go back.
Okay.
I am that person that if I don't get charged for extra chicken at Qdoba, I say something. If a total doesn't seem right, I say something just to make sure. I'm a big believer in, like, putting good karma out into the world and, you know, you reap what you sow. And I very much believe that if you take advantage of situations like that, you are going to pay for it in some way down the road. And it's just, at the end of the day, it's just not right. I could not stomach willingly going to make a purchase and then taking advantage of someone's mistake, I guess.
Okay. Rachel?
So, I'm going to preface this by saying I'd probably throw the receipt away and not look at it. And so it would probably be like a month later before I realized the charge never came out of my account, because I like to use credit cards for all my expenses and get rewards points and pay it off every month. And so, yes, I look at our finances every couple of weeks, but usually I don't do like expenditure tracking, like, but like once a month. So it would take me like a month to figure out that it had not come out. And at that point, I probably would, if it was a large chain and they had a customer service line, like call customer service and tell them about it. If it was a small store, I'd probably call them and tell them about it. I'm too lazy to go back in. I would call first and be like, can you take care of this over the phone? Charge me the money that I owe you, please. And if they required me to come back in, I don't know if I'd do it.
What?
Because I'd forget.
Rachel.
I'd have to make my wife, I'd have to tell Kristen, I'd have to be like,
please hold all judgments to the end of the round.
Yeah. It's so rude. But I'd have to tell Kristen, be like, okay, I have to go in to do this. Please don't let me forget, because then I'll feel like a terrible person. I wouldn't feel nearly as guilty as Kristen would.
Okay.
And there have been times where I've noticed stuff before, but it was never $500. It was like 10.
Okay.
But also, like Kristen said, good karma in the world. And there have been times where I have paid for things and then left them sitting on the checkout counter because I forgot to grab that one bag. So, like, I feel like it just equals out when it's just a few things here and there.
All right, Joe.
I have to agree with Rachel to an extent. I'm the person who throws away the receipt and uses the credit card, and I don't check mine nearly as much as I should. However, the differing here is I wouldn't call the store. I would notice it a month later and be like, that's their fault. Unpopular opinion, I know. But they have insurance. These companies have insurance for this reason. I didn't steal it. I have a receipt somewhere in the trash. But I have a receipt saying it's been paid for in full. So at that point, it's a mistake on the company's part.
Okay, harsh, Jordan. Harsh. Jordan, okay. I'm going to go a little bit further because, again, this happened to me, and I'm going to tell you exactly what I did, and then I'll tell you why I did it. So I noticed immediately before we left the store. I read the receipt, and it said 000, and I was like, okay. But it didn't have a charge. Like, it didn't say the remainder of the amount that I was supposed to be charged. So I looked at my bank card. Like you, I pay with credit cards. Sometimes it takes a little bit to show up, so I didn't think anything of it. I was like, whatever. So as soon as I got home, I checked my bank again because it was a good 45-minute drive to this place. Fairly large retailer, I'll say that, for where we are. And I checked, and it never came out. So the kind of item I purchased, and I'm not gonna go into detail on what it was because I think that, you know, I'm going to try to keep the company anonymous as possible because that's kind of embarrassing and stuff like that. But it it was one of those things that you just don't want to let walk out of a door, like, kind of thing. And so I was just really confused, and I called up a couple of my friends, and I said, hey, I think this has happened. You know, have you ever had this happen before? Have you ever purchased online and had this kind of stuff happen? They said, no, you know, that's never happened to me. And I said, okay, well, you know, I'm a little concerned. What do I do? And they said, you know, honestly, you have a receipt. There's really not much you can do. And then I thought about it, and a point was made to me from someone who goes and frequents this place often. And they said, you know, it's probably best that you let it go. And I was like, why? Because I had that thought. I want to go, like, I want to make this right. Good karma, right? And they said, the best karma you can give is to let it go. Again, they have insurance. That was part of it. But also, the person who let that happen would likely lose their job. Would likely, you know...
That's a really good point that I did not think of.
And I was in a same boat because I was like, oh, you know, I need to go back. I need to do this because, you know, that's a, you don't just let that kind of item walk out. But, and I know what you're about to say. Yes, if they let that kind of item walk out, they probably shouldn't have their job. But, okay. My thought after that was they have a family to feed. I went in an extremely busy weekend. You know, it was during the time of the year where everybody was purchasing these kind of items. So it kind of made it like everything was hectic when I got in there. It was crazy. And also, I mean, he was like, do you have the receipt? You know, there's really nothing that can come back for you. And I was like, cool, cool, cool. So I made like 4 copies of this receipt because you know how receipts fade over time. I put it in my like little safe. Nah, I kept it, and I was like, I'm not going to make a big deal about it. In my head, I was doing the good karma thing by not getting that person fired who let that walk out the door. However, instant karma came, and I then had a $300 charge, and I had to get my freaking brakes fixed immediately. So karma came, and I feel like I've been balanced.
I would like to make 2 points. First, I was not going to say that... What I was going to say is that company probably would have not noticed the money missing and the item in question being out of their inventory, and that person would be on record in their point of sale system as the cashier who rang it up and would likely get fired anyway.
That's not how it works in point of sales usually. What usually happens is if you total an item out, it goes out. The only thing that would be tied back to that item is, it wouldn't be tied back to the item specifically. It would just be tied back to their GL, which is their general ledger.
But yeah, but there would be $500 missing. We mentioned that, right? 500. Yeah. There would be $500 missing and an item out of inventory that was unaccounted for.
No, what I'm saying is it subtracted the item from the inventory.
I get that. But what I'm saying is their ledger would still be $500 off. And if they traced it back, it would still be in the point of sale system associated with that person who checked you out. Because you have to log in to point of sale systems.
In some cases. Some places use one general point of sale login number.
That is true. But, oh my gosh, stop it.
I'm just saying.
I know, but we're doing what we do. We get into logic battles. All I'm saying is there is a high degree of likelihood that person could have gotten fired anyway.
Right. And that's true. And you're not wrong at all. But the thought process of if I don't, like, I mean, it's kind of like if it's not going to happen, why put yourself in the position to make it happen kind of thing.
There's a retailer that does shitty shit. I would feel a lot less guilty about my money going into the pockets of the CEOs and what have you. Because... they're shitty.
That's a good point.
In summation, I think Rachel said this very eloquently. They're shitty.
Don't be shit. Okay, good. I like that one.
That'd be the name of the episode.
They're shitty. They're shitty. It's hanging shitty. All right, here's a good one. So you are a network administrator for a company, okay? You work with your best friend's spouse. Your best friend's spouse asks you to unquarantine an email for them. In that email it's actually an email to their lover. Here's where it gets morally incorrect.
Here?
Here.
Just here?
Just here. For you, anyways.
Okay.
So you're the network administrator. You unquarantine the email. You find out, because it's usually quarantine emails come from outside sources. So it's an email coming from an outside source. And you have the opportunity. Do you tell your best friend about the stuff that you found out? In doing so, you would be breaching the confidentiality of knowing what happens inside employees' emails. And as long as it's not breaking the law, even though you cannot use this as a law, don't use this as like a, oh, it's spousal, when cheating is against the law kind of thing. It wouldn't hold up in court. That's what I'm saying. That.
So what's the question?
Do you tell your best friend that their spouse is cheating on them? Because in doing it would be tied directly to you that they found out, which could come into conversation that you broke confidentiality and you could get fired for doing so.
So,
and potentially lose your license, because if you're a network administrator, you're likely going to have clearance and certifications about being a...
So the spouse asked you to unquarantine an email?
Mm-hmm. Because usually in those situations, people don't realize that the people who unquarantine emails can see what's inside them.
Why would... I've never heard of somebody asking for an email to be unquarantined.
I have to ask IT for unquarantining emails all the time. Because what happens is it comes into my quarantine folder, and unless it gets released, and it has to be verified as safe before it can be released. Because, again, we've been having a lot of scammers come through, try to, like, get malware onto our systems. And if you open up an email from, for example, say, like, a seller or something like that, and it's not a real seller, and it's actually just a bunch of malware, and they steal a lot of, in my case, like, my client would be students, so they steal a lot of student information. That could be very, very bad. So it has to be asked to be released, because otherwise you could be opening your company up to a huge security breach. So
you can see the email
as the network administrator after you.
No. As the spouse, you can see the email.
You just see that you have a quarantine email. You send.
Oh, so you don't know what it is.
You don't know what it is. You just see that, hey, you have an email in your quarantine folder. You send it to network to get it released.
I have never heard of that happening.
That's not
your
question.
Your company needs to get with the program, but anyways,
that can be said.
Oh boy.
You really locked onto the semantics of that one.
I didn't understand what the situation was, because I've never worked at a place where you had to ask for emails to be unquarantined. I don't know what their process is, but I've literally never had to ask someone to send me an email that was sent to me.
It can get weird in bigger companies sometimes, or in companies that feel they have a reason to have that much security.
Okay. What I would probably do, and this is going to be a very unsatisfying answer, but what I would probably do is talk to the spouse first. And depending upon that conversation, that would drive what I do next. Yep.
Okay.
There's always the possibility that there are things going on behind closed doors that you don't know about. Maybe that couple has an open relationship and you just don't know that. Or maybe they know about it and they're okay with it. Or whatever. You don't know. And so I think it's hard to say that you would butt in so directly. But I think my first stop would be to talk to the spouse. Let them know I know, and be like, hey, like, what's going on here? And then go from there. I don't think that I could go on knowing that information and knowing that my best friend didn't know. Like, if I had talked to the spouse and been like, hey, like, something's got to happen here. And then they're like, yeah. And then months go by and nothing does. I think I would eventually reach a point where something would give. It's hard to say what, but I do think at the very least I would talk to the spouse.
First things first, Monica, if you cheated on Jordan and I found out about it, you better watch out. Because I would come at you like a fucking spider monkey.
And as you should. But I'm going to go ahead and say that it's very clear that I am the reacher in this relationship and she is the settler. So I'm just gonna throw that out there.
Jordan smacked Monica in the back of the head.
That is not ever a thing that you have to worry about.
Excuse you. Stop it with your imposter syndrome. Shut the fuck up.
Imposter.
You are beautiful and you are a catch.
I'm beautiful, yes, but I'm shit.
You are not shit. You are the catch.
Never see your face.
Okay. So, second of all, I would not tell the spouse because then that could potentially, I would not talk to them because they could then try to like start like doing some shady shit with your best friend and your relationship and start trying to be like, this person is just, you know, using you. Anyway, you know what? What I would do is I wouldn't tell anyone, but I would make it my personal mission to figure it out in a way that does not connect me back to my work, and or at least tell my best friend about it and let them find a way to figure it out that does not connect back to that said email, so that way there can be no like defamation or anything like that. So I would make it my personal mission though to be like, eyes on you, I'm watching you constantly, and I will figure you out, you motherfucker.
Okay, Joe.
This is a hard one. But I have half a mind to agree with Rachel. But I have to say, in the case of our friendship, there's four of us. So if my best friend's wife is cheating on them, that means that my wife's best friend is the one cheating. I'm going to go to my wife and say, get your friend in line or I'm going to. I'm going to make it her problem because it is her best friend. Or it's going to become my problem.
Deal with it before I have to.
Okay.
So basically she's saying, you better deal with this before I have to, or else you're going to be sleeping on the couch for like 6 months straight.
Basically, you will get involved. There is no hope for you. So you guys all went a very interesting way. You all did something that I would not do. Actually, Rachel had the most closest to what I would do. I agree. I would make it my personal mission to find a way, but I would go about it in a different way. I would go to the person that sent the email. I would be guised as maybe a fake account.
Okay, Monica. Monica, okay.
I would go to, and I would be like, look, I don't know if you know this, but the person you are messing with and talking to, I'm not going to tell you how I know this, but I'm going to tell you I know this. And I would create like a fake persona. I would literally go Ava and send that person the communication and be like, I'm just letting you know. If you didn't know, I am aware of these transgressions. And it will be known if it does not stop. And just go from there. And just be like, you're better than this. I'm trying to talk them up. And if they didn't know, then, you know, hey, maybe that makes their life better. Now they do know that they're messing with the skis ball. And then the situation will work itself out organically. Because then likely what's going to happen is going to be like, my best friend is going to come to me and be like, this person totally emailed me today and told me that so-and-so's been cheating on me with all this stuff. And I'm like, oh my god, so weird. How'd they find out? Like, what happened? Well, this other random person just emailed them. Somehow they found out about it. And I was like, okay, cool. Bye. Just go on with my life. Because that releases that moral obligation I have, but at the same time, it also protects my company in a way, because it keeps everything safeguarded.
It also protects you because then, you know,
I'm being a good friend.
You're being a good friend, but you're also like, if you don't want to be the one to break the bad news and go against your company, but you would feel too guilty about not telling your best friend, you're still doing it in a way that wouldn't come back to you that like they wouldn't know about that it came from you that emailed the homewrecker, which the homewrecker could be the best the spouse, who knows, but you know what I mean, the other party right. in the affair.
Well, and if it is like an open relationship or something like that, kind of like what Kristen said, there's a lot that goes on behind closed doors that you don't know about. So if it is one of those situations that, you know, you're not aware of and you're not, you know, whatever, then that person would likely respond back and be like, I don't know what you're talking about, we all know about this, and you know, it would be kind of squash kind of thing. But at the same time, then like I would never be able to live with myself if Rachel was cheating on Kristen and I knew about it and I didn't tell Kristen. So the next one, I think we might have chatted about, I got it off of a video game a long time ago. You are a prince. Okay. Your brother is the king. He's a tyrannical king. Everybody hates him. Henry VIII style. You stand up to him one day and you say, stop being a piece of shit. And he says, no, we've captured your lover, who is a known rebel to the cause, who has tried to assassinate me many a times. We've captured her. We've also captured these three farmers who are thieves. They've been trying to steal food. It is your choice now, because you want to be king so bad. You get to decide who dies, either your lover or the farmers. And if you choose to try to do any of them, none of them, I mean, they all die.
I've got one problem with this scenario. Why can't I be a princess? God, my name literally means princess. I feel like we should point that one out.
Why don't you tell everybody what your last name means?
I don't feel like that's appropriate.
All right, Kristen, so what would you do?
Can I get more information on what the farmers did?
They stole bread.
Why?
Because the king is tyrannical.
And are they Poe?
Yeah, I mean, he starves everyone. He's a king. He wants it all. Nobody gets nothing but him.
What else has my lover done? Have they just tried to kill the king and that's it? That's their only crime?
I mean, they've corralled rebels to try to overthrow the throne. And in doing so would effectively have you probably killed as well.
Oh, boy. Obviously, the moral dilemma here is supposed to be it's your lover. I can't...
Or is three lives equal to one?
Well, that's not even a dilemma for me. In no world would I kill more people than I have to, I think. Unless you're talking about a room with, like, Hitler, Stalin, some of the worst people in history... Maybe get rid of them all. What?
So you're saying bye-bye, Rachel?
I mean, if Rachel killed or was trying to kill people, and it was between that or some poor farmers who are just trying to survive and feed their families... And I had to make a decision. Why, other than the fact that it's Rachel, should I choose to kill them over her? Tell me.
Okay, Rachel, what would you do?
So, first things first. Hashtag... Sag life. I am a Sagittarius. We recover quickly. We're not usually big on commitment. I mean, I love my wife. Don't get me wrong. I'm committed to her. But also, like, treason against a king versus stealing some bread. There's one of those that historically has been more of a death penalty type sentence. And yeah, it's my lover, but like you said, Mo, if they gonna try to kill a king, overthrow the king, they want to overthrow the monarchy, I'm next in line if I'm the prince. I'm gonna be like, bye, bitch.
So you agreed with my assessment? Kill the lover?
Make an assessment.
Yes.
Okay, so y'all were all looking at me like I just sent my wife to the gallows, and my wife
Time
was
out.
Like, yeah, agreed.
Time out. I never said shit. That was all Jordan.
That was all Jordan. And I would like to say that I was over here going,
okay, Joe.
I'm nodding, by the way.
Joe, what would you do? Just to play devil's advocate here. Oh my
God. I feel like if this king is so just mean and ruthless, this is a trick. If I basically just told him he's a piece of shit and I wish he was dead or not the king, and he gave me this option and I made a choice, I feel like he'd laugh in my face and then kill them all just to prove a point.
Wait, at what point did the prince tell the king he was a piece of shit?
Very beginning of the story.
I don't remember that.
Literally the first and second time I told it.
I forget things. I am listening. I just am forgetful.
Yeah, you forget where those bombs are.
Excuse you. Mm-hmm. This is why. Sagittarius. This is why. I keep the game directions right in front of me because I'm forgetful unless I read things, okay? I forget what I hear easily.
Okay, so I'm going to make an assessment.
Especially stories.
All right, I'm going to make an assessment.
Make an assessment.
Okay, so here's my thought process. I agree with Kristen. I agree with Rachel. I think I agree with Jordan. I really don't know what direction she was going in.
She was going in the direction of kill them all.
Okay.
Kristen gets it.
That's my best friend.
No, I don't get it. I don't get the answer. I just listened.
Okay. So
that's my best friend.
I I agree with both. I actually agree with all of you in this. I would likely choose to kill them all. And here's why. Because my girlfriend, lover, whatever, when you join a rebellion or cause a rebellion, you have to understand that there is some potential, or the potential is very high, that you will be the first killed. Like, I mean, in the history of ever, when you create a rebellion, you are going to be killed. Like, that's just how it's going to be. Like, there's just really no ifs, ands, or buts. Like, that is a risk and a calculated risk that you take. So, I mean, at that point, like, I'm sorry, again, you're trying to overthrow the kingdom that we have. And in order to maintain consistency and stuff, like, you're treasoning, whatever, you die. And then also, at the same time, while I don't agree with it, why is, you know, the whole, again, eye for an eye, what is worse in that situation? Why force me to make a choice? If you are saying, if you don't choose to kill one or the other, then I will kill all of them. That's your choice. You're choosing to do so. I will not make that choice for you.
No.
I'm not. What,
highly disagree.
What is going to do good?
You, in that moment, chose. Mm-hmm. He gave you the choice. And you chose to kill three.
I chose to kill four, actually.
Why four?
Because they all equal four. I'm choosing to not choose. So all your of them
lover
will die.
Or two farmers?
Three farmers.
Whatever.
Just four. Four deaths. Equal.
I would like to say that I agree with Kristen on that. Because, yes, you were saying to your brother, how dare you force me to make this cruel choice that you would make. But in that moment, like Kristen said, you are still choosing to make a cruel choice. You are putting your self-interests of not being perceived as a cruel ruler as part of this monarchy above the interests of the lives of four people.
Okay, but you also forget that if I chose the farmers, or if I chose the girlfriend, people are going to hear about that, and they're going to say, you're just like your brother. And it doesn't matter to me what they think of me. I could give a damn less what they think of me. I didn't make that choice. I said, I'm not doing it. You are a king. You're the person making that choice. I'm just telling you it's shitty that you're putting people in this position and you want to act all like high and mighty. I'm not going to be a part of that. That's your choice.
I feel like that's just as bad, though.
Is it?
They made you a part of it at that point.
He made you a part of it and you decided to do nothing, which makes you just as complicit in their
deaths. That's not the same.
How?
Because I chose not to. I stood up. And I did what I thought was right. I said, hey, what you're doing is wrong.
To not make a choice is not a choice in that scenario. You are given three choices, and you have to choose one.
Okay, so why is being a treason worse than stealing? Because that bread that they stole, what if that was going to a baby? What if that was going to feed a family? That doesn't matter. Okay, that's not the premise.
You can get into that all you want, but in no realm does stealing trump murder. Never, ever, 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 ever.
Attempted murder.
I will disagree. But maybe I disagree because I know what happens next.
What happens next? What are you keeping from us?
Well, there's another prompt.
Plot twist.
That's a good one. There's an M. Night Shyamalan coming next.
Fucking Sideshow Bob over here.
I have a request. Mm-hmm. Can you stop calling every plot twist ever an M. Night Shyamalan?
No, I'm going to start calling every plot twist ever now.
No. Listen. Because I need you to call it instead an M. Night Shyamalan-a-dingus.
I was going to say Shyamalama Ding Dong would have been way better.
Whatever.
Whatever. Okay. So I hear what you guys are saying. And I agree with you. I think that, you know, it's all crap. But at the same time, I also don't agree that not making a choice in that situation, I think, is different. And we're not going to see eye to eye on that. But I will say this. So next, the rebellion, even after the death of your lover, since we all decided to kill her, succeeds. The king is overthrown, and you as the brother actually end up killing him in the game. You kill your brother. And the dying breath he has is, congratulations, you killed me, you got me. And now you're going to see how hard it is to be king. And you're going to understand why I made people live in the ruins in the way that I did, because you don't even know what is coming. And blah, blah, blah. So years go, as you went to gain your favors in the rebellion, because obviously you took over and you were like, fuck this, he just killed all these people, I'm not going to join him anymore, I'm going to go be part of the rebellion. That's how the game starts, that choice, and then you go be a part of the rebellion. You overthrow your brother. In that rebellion, you promise a lot of things to a lot of people, saying how much better it's going to be once we overthrow this king, how much amazing it's going to be, and that the world is going to be better with you as a king, and I need your help to do that. I need your help to overthrow this guy. So a lot of people are like, yeah, I'll do that if you promise to help our people. You know, our people need these things. They need running water. Our people needs this. Our people needs that. Right? So all those promises are made. And what your brother eventually says comes true. There is a darkness that is coming in, and it is much, much stronger than any of your forces have ever held. Your entire time being a king, you have spent trying to build up your treasury to be able to afford all the things to make sure you can protect you and your people from this darkness or this other battle. It's like a war, if I could put it blindly. So with that, the time has come. The war is ready. The stage is set. You have to fight. And you're given a sleuth of choices.
A sleuth?
A sleuth.
A slew.
Sleuth.
You could also have some sleuthy choices.
You're giving a slew of choices, okay? And, like, one of them is you can either give part of your treasury to go to an orphanage, which would cost, like, $250,000, which in this time is a lot of money. Or you could turn that orphanage into a titty bar, which instead would generate money. Those are one of the choices that you can make. Now, part of the rebellion, you promised this group of people that you would build an orphanage. So in doing so, if you chose to build that orphanage, you take that money away from being able to build your forces to protect your people. If you build a titty bar, you'd get a lot more money to protect your people, but you would piss a lot of people off. Do you see the kind of choices that you have to make? Okay. So that's, you have like a whole bunch of choices that you have to make. That in the end, the idea is you can either fulfill all these promises that you've made to these people, and like 90% of everybody will die. All of your constituents will die, but at least they'll like you. Or you can be just like your brother, rescind on all the promises that you've made, say, no, fuck that. We need to prepare for this war. We need to make sure we have enough. 90% of the people will live, but they will all hate you. So what do you do? And there is no happy medium, by the way. There is not a single way you can go. I've tried every single thing you can do. There is not a happy medium. I promise you there's not.
So, number one, I think one part of being a leader, and this is anywhere, you have to make tough choices. And in my opinion, your job is not to be liked. It's to make the right decision. Now, right is very subjective, obviously. I mean, that's the whole point of this episode. But, you know, if we're going to go, you know, real high level, I would do what I would need to do to keep the people alive and keep them prospering as much as possible. I want to go back to the example that you said of orphanage versus titty bar. You can do both. I think, sure you can. You can do the titty bar first. You can generate money and then build the orphanage down the line. I understand in the game, it's one or the other. But in real life, you can do both. And I think that you can make tough choices, and the outcome and the impact of that can be very different depending upon how you go about that choice. You know, one thing that I did when I was in a previous management role, and it seemed to work extremely well, it was the best approach that I found considering the environment that I was in, is anytime I asked somebody to do something, I gave them all the pertinent information of why. Nobody ever had to question why they were doing something or why I made a decision. They were given that information up front. And I never once, even with people who I thought I was going to get trouble from, I never once had somebody not fulfill the request. They were given the information up front. They didn't like it, but they still did it. I mean, sometimes you have to make decisions that people aren't going to like, and maybe they'll like you less for it, but 100%, if I was in that boat, I think you can strike a balance between making the tough decisions and doing your best to make sure people understand why a decision was made. Whether or not they like it, at least they have the information regarding your thought process and why you made the decision that you did.
What game is this?
Fables 3.
That's right. You said that in the beginning. Sorry. I'm with Kristen. You can do both. Why not build an orphanage that's a titty bar? Just kidding. But no, seriously, we are in the times of monarchies and fabled lands and fantasies. You could turn the orphanage into a sweatshop. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to make the orphans work.
No, that is a thing in here.
Oh, in Fable 3?
Yeah, I'm reading through. So basically, it kind of breaks it down for you. So you have a year to protect your people from the darkness. And in that year, you need to have raised $6.5 million. And If you do all evil judgments, you will raise a total of $4.45 million. And you will have to transfer a certain amount from your personal treasury in order to cover the deficit. If you do all benevolent, you will start off with a deficit of negative $2.0 million. So you will have to transfer already $2 million.
$8.5 million.
Yeah. Into your budget. And then there's like other things you can donate to kind of create it. The values required for transfers from the personal funds are measured in total. You can make the transfers in quantity of no more than 1 million at a time. So you can only make them during like 1 million at a time during a quest. So you have to have had made these transfers throughout the entire game for them to be a thing. Otherwise, there's no way you can do it. So you have had to have been a benevolent ruler the entire time. Kind of thing. No personal anything. So the choices you can do with 365 days to go is you can lower taxes. That is good, but you will have a negative impact of 400,000. You could raise taxes, which is evil, obviously, and you have an impact of positive 200,000. Open school, good outcome, negative 200,000. Reinstate child labor, evil. But your treasury impact will be positive 500,000. Rebuild things, don't rebuild things. Raise guard budget, don't raise guard budget.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there.
So, yeah, it's just...
Because I have my answer.
A whole bunch of different stuff. Again, renovate the shelter, turn it into a brothel.
So, I think that they're, you know, like Kristen said, this is real life. It's not a game. Yes, the game has black and white choices.
But that's the thing.
Right. But, however, I think that there are things that you can do even within those limits that are both good and slightly bad, but inherently evil necessities at times. But I think that by investing in your orphanage and your schools and things like that, you're investing in the future of your people. And so, yes, that may take money out of your treasury now, but if you are investing in the future of your people, you use money from your own treasury to help them survive past this coming battle, then I strongly believe that your people will flourish after that. People will get more educated. They will be able to get higher paying jobs.
It's a monarchy. The only rich motherfucker is...
That's not true. Nobility.
Well, fair. But I like where you're going with the whole investing in the future. But understanding if you invest in those things, there will be no future. There's 90% of people, if you invest in those things, are going to die. There is no future there.
You just said that you could transfer money from your royal treasuries to cover the deficits.
Right.
Before the battle.
Before the battle. But if you don't have that stuff in tow, and I mean, obviously that's outside of this scope.
But you made it sound like it did.
If you do it throughout the entire game from day one.
Yes.
You're telling me that throughout the... Okay. Well, that's outside of what I presented at the beginning.
It is. Okay. So let me wrap up my situation here. I think you can do both. I think you can... If you were able to wiggle the confines of the game just slightly... You can build a titty bar. You can build an orphanage. There's just a smaller titty bar and a smaller orphanage.
That's fair.
Break even. You know, do good. I don't know why building a titty bar would be doing bad, but I guess not building the orphanage is the bad part of that. But do good. And then also do things that make you money. You also could employ your children to do things that aren't necessarily... child labor. They could be required as part of their orphanage to, you know, do so many volunteering hours, which helps to rebuild the city. And
congratulations, you're orphaned, you have to work for it.
No, but you know what I'm saying. Like, okay, maybe not required, but encouraged. And it's to help them build character. You know, they could do so many things to volunteer to help build the community up in other ways and things like that. But also, I think you could, yes, there are so many orphans, build a smaller orphanage. You could ask another country to go in on an orphanage with you.
or a titty bar with you. Casino on state lines.
Joe, do you have anything to add or take away from this discussion before we move forward?
I feel like we got really off track.
I feel like if we're talking in lines of the game exactly as you laid it out in the beginning, I would build the titty bar.
I knew that was about to come out of her mouth. I mean, she'd be like, titties.
Not exactly that. I'm thinking business, so it's financial income. And if this is real world, yeah, that financial income will put you in a place where you're good to handle the darkness and your orphans. Open your castle doors and let those poor orphans live with you. Figure it out, chump.
Yeah, chump. So I agree with Kristen a lot in this scenario. Being a part of being a leader is making really tough decisions. But what, and when I'm going through all this, and when I went through this game, what frustrated me the most is that it's like, why can't I be honest with my people of what's coming? Because, like, the whole thing is you don't want to freak your people out. You don't want to, you know, make them think it's something that's bigger than what, you know, it's terrifying. You shouldn't hide it from them, but you have to save face, all that stuff. And my thought is okay, why can't I tell them, hey, right now we're facing a grave danger. Mm-hmm. All of you will die if I'm not being smart with my decisions. I made a lot of promises to you. I did. And I intend to keep every one of those promises the best I can. However, that was also before I found out that our entire way of life was at stake. I don't agree with how my brother ran things, so I'm going to be honest with you. This is what's at stake here. If I do A, B, and C and keep those promises to you, then we will all die. Your children will all die. If I put those promises off a little bit and I'm able to successfully get us through this treachery, then I will work to maintain that we keep those promises. I will work to ensure that those promises are kept. I don't agree with the whole it's all or nothing thing, but at the same time, I agree that I would also build a titty bar. I'm sorry, the orphanage, there's going to be orphans with or without a building. I mean, not to be rude, but it's not going to, like, the deficit is $300,000, the difference is. And that could make it or break whether or not we have enough money to keep our people alive and safe through this entire situation. So, I mean, that's how you have to think. Every decision you make is going to change. I mean, hell, we could tie that into the pandemic right now currently. Like, we're making choices every single day. It may seem like it's an annoyance because we have to wear a mask. It may seem like it's an annoyance because we have to go 14 days out of work if we are potentially infected. And those are all annoying things. And that's all something that we like to, you know, get mad about at the government. But the risk is much more calculated and it's much more higher. We see the death rates are rising and, you know, all that stuff. If you believe in science, if you don't, that's fine too. But, like, just putting it into perspective of what we could deal with today. Like, those choices are very impactful for what we're currently going through. But I agree. I would be honest. I think being a leader, I would say, look, you may hate me for this decision, but I have to make it. And this is why I'm making it. And I'm sorry. And I will do my best to make sure I keep my promises in the future.
Just go enjoy the titties.
The moral of this story, Jordan just cares about titties.
All right, so
not a bad thing to care about.
We're all queer here.
I shortened this quite a bit because it, like I had hoped, it took a little bit to get through things. I think we've had a lot of really good conversations. And I have one more for us. So at first we started out with 10. I think we're ending out with 8 now. Because I deleted 2. This is our 5th one?
I think so.
Are you sure? 20 on the ground.
There was two-part questions.
Store. Oh, yeah. Actually, we're at 6 or 7. Okay. Because I was going to do the one where we watched the movie called The Silence the other day. And at one point, They were all on a train hiding from something, and this woman had her baby on the train, and they basically forced her off the train, and that pissed me off to no end, because of course she ended up dying. But I guess I get it. The moral was either you push the woman with the baby off the train, everybody lives, or you let the woman with the baby on the train stay and everybody dies, which at the end of the day, I'm pretty sure they all died anyways, but that's beside the point. It's not a spoiler alert. It has no bearing to the story at all. But I guess spoiler alert. So that was in there, but I took that one out. So the last one, so you're a doctor at a hospital. You have 5 people on a transplant list. You have 1 heart. Okay. I need everyone to listen because I do not want to repeat this a million times. Minesweeper.
It is my fidget spinner. I'm listening. I'm just bad at remembering things that I hear.
Yeah, I'm bad at remembering.
Fuck all y'all.
All right. So these are your choices between who gets the heart. Okay, so that's the end of the question. Who gets the heart? It can be either an A 7-year-old child who has had 4 open heart surgeries and has a 15% chance of survival. Do you want me to text those to you? Okay. So a 7-year-old child has had 4 previous open heart surgeries, has a 15% chance of survival.
With the new heart?
With the new heart. A 75-year-old has had no previous surgeries, has a 90% chance of survival. A 35-year-old convicted murderer, convicted of committing war crimes, has a 75% chance of survival. The hospital chaplain, who donates very large sums of money to your hospital every single year, has a 20% chance of survival. Or a homeless woman and local junkie who has been kicked out of the hospital multiple times trying to get opioids for her opioid addiction, has a 90% chance of survival.
I would like to start off by saying doctors never have to make these choices. They are made for them.
I'm going to throw myself out your 2-story window.
Good. Oh boy. So I think in times like this, if you're talking about a precious organ, you have 1, there's demand for 5. I feel like you have to approach it in a very cold manner. So I think you have to take away you have to take away the moral pieces of it and look at it in a very cold and medical manner. So who has the best, who is going to benefit from this heart the most? The 7-year-old kid that's probably going to die anyways, mark him off. Forget that he's 7 years old. He has a 15% chance of survival.
Well, in some areas, some people would say that, oh, he has so much life left to live, or she, whoever.
Sure.
Has so much life left to live. But at the same time, then you can also say at the same side of things, they haven't lived that long.
Right.
So they don't really have much to lose.
Right. And if you have a 15% chance of survival, you have to remember too that whoever you give this heart to, it also means that somebody else is not getting it. Mm-hmm. And so it's the checks and balances of, no decision is a good decision, but what is the lesser of all evils. So I would count the kid out. I would also count the 75-year-old out. Just purely because they're old.
I did forget to mention in this original case study that the prisoner is in prison for life. Okay. But does have a possibility of parole.
Okay.
So I feel like that is important to note.
Okay. So who's left? The junkie, the murderer, and...
The chaplain.
The chaplain. How old's the chaplain?
No age, but chance of survival, 20%.
Ooh. See, if you look at it in the coldest medical manner, and you just break it down to the two people with the best chance of survival, you're left with the junkie and the murderer. Mm-hmm. This is almost an impossible choice, because being presented with the moral facts, it makes it an impossible choice. Because obviously you don't want to give an organ to someone who's just going to piss it away.
Well, and that's why I chose this one as the last one, because I feel like it's so difficult in the sense of, like, when you look at it from the cold, hard medical facts, you have a very clear answer. It's very easy to decide which one gets that heart.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're looking at it from a moral sense of high ground, which, at the end of the day, isn't that what being a doctor is? You have a moral... Like, what the Hippocratic Oath, it's all based on your moral obligation to always serve and do no harm.
But a doctor never makes this decision. There is a governing body that makes the decision for them. They get told who gets the organ, and they just do it. And their role is to treat that patient and keep that patient alive.
Fine. You are the swing vote on the governing body that decides who gets this heart.
I'm not arguing with you about that. I'm just...
Well, that's your hang-up. Your hang-up is that the doctor would never make this choice.
No, that's not my hang-up. My hang-up is that it's an impossible choice. Yes, Jordan.
I don't think it's an impossible choice. Clearly here, the junkie gets the heart. Depending on their age, how old are they?
No age.
That's okay, but that's where I was leaning.
It is a heart. Meaning that this junkie is going to be in the hospital for a long time recovering from this open heart surgery, which is enough time to get them clean and sober and put them up for an opportunity with a social worker to get back up in life. I rest my case. They have a 90% survival rate, and they have... They have a 90% survival rate. And the likelihood of cleaning themselves up and living a better life for the rest of the time they do have. They might possibly have children. We don't know that.
So I'm just going to throw the 7-year-old out. Sorry, kid. You got a 15% chance. You've already had 4 open heart surgeries. It's a high likelihood that... Even if you survive the next surgery itself, your road is going to be rough with a 15% chance of survival after surgery. Convicted murderer? Well, fuck you. I don't care that you're in prison and you can't do any more harm, because you could still do harm to people in prison. And also, you did lots of harm. And I don't think you should get it. Plus, you have a lower percentage than other people. Hospital chaplain, you're a great person, but you only have a 20% chance of living. And I think that you as the chaplain would even say, give this to someone else who has a better shot. I'm torn between the junkie and the 75-year-old. The 75-year-old, yes, would only have like 10 years of life left, but they could have a great life. However, it is more unlikely that a 75-year-old would, the 90% chance to me says that that's 90% chance of survival with a new heart. That's not the survival rate of the surgery. An open heart surgery for a 75-year-old is very, very difficult and intensive, and it's highly unlikely that they would even be recommended to have open heart surgery at that age, because it would likely kill them. The anesthesia could kill them, just the stress of the surgery. So I think the better bet is the homeless woman. And I agree with Jordan. She has the most to live for, to turn around her life for, besides the 7-year-old and the chaplain, but they have very, very low percentages. And it would just be a sad state of affairs if they ended up passing after getting a new heart. She could turn her life around. We don't know her circumstances. We don't know why she's a junkie. Also, I firmly believe that the junkie crisis, the opioid crisis, all of that is a systematic failure of our culture. And I think that if I were a junkie, if I were to put myself in her shoes, and I got a new heart, I got a new lease on life, and it saved my life, it might change my tune. And so the hopeful person in me would bet on the junkie, because I have seen people do it before, too.
Okay. Okay, Rachel. Rachel, okay. Okay, Kristen. Kristen, okay. Okay, Joe. Joe, okay. So I'm with you guys. 7-year-old. Sorry, bud. Like, it's been real. Hasn't been fun. Not been real fun. But, so, cutting that off. I also agree with Kristen. 75-year-old, gone. Not even worried about it. The 35-year-old who is a convicted murderer, I'm not even going to entertain that idea, because even though you're out for parole, you are literally squandering away a heart that could have been used to save somebody who hadn't done any of those atrocities for quite some time. And there's no guarantee that you will get out on parole. So, the potential of you staying inside that prison system for the rest of your life and taking that heart to stay with you, it's essentially condemning that heart to death. And like, at that point, what was it all for? Sorry, bud. The hospital chaplain, I don't care how much money you donate, your chance of survival is 20%. Like, sorry, but again, in this potential situation, the biggest odds is the underdog, which is the homeless woman. And I believe something else that, like, I thought about when I was reading this is, what is the cost of the person who donated that heart? What kind of legacy are you giving them when you give this heart to another person? That's the moral round I took it from. Not from any of the recipients. I have no moral attachment to any of them. But the person who donated the heart, how would that heart be most fulfilled? Because at the end of the day, it is because of that person who donated the heart that this potential life has been given. So you would want to see that life be the most fulfilled. And if the odds are that this homeless woman went back to drugs and alcohol and all that stuff, yeah, that's pretty big odds. But, I mean, that's not anything worse than giving it to the 7-year-old who only has a 15% chance of survival. I mean, that's still the same odds. Like, yeah, they could come back and they could do all this bad shit again, but what's the difference of giving it to a kid who's going to die, who's probably going to have 6 months to live anyways? You know what I'm saying? So I guess that's where my moral high ground comes from, is from the donor and making sure that their donation wasn't in vain. And the only way in this potential situation is to do it for the homeless woman. But again, the hospital chaplain would likely have a leg up because he donates to the hospital so much in a year. So the governing body would probably be like, well, gives a lot of money, we know the hospital is going to get paid. So that's my take.
This exercise was revealing. the moral of the story here that I've gotten is Jordan would kill everyone and want all the titties. that's where we're at.
The moral of the story is that it is not black and white. There's a ton of gray space, and we can all sit here and play devil's advocate, but until we're in the moment and making that decision,
we can say we're going to make a decision one way or the other, but we really don't know what we're going to do. In all of reality, if I was put in the position where I had to confront my older sibling that they're being a dick, I wasn't going to do it because I'm non-confrontational. I just let him be a dick, live my life. I mean, if my significant other wanted to kill him, that's on them, you know? But, I mean, it's the harsh reality of it. You never know how you're going to react until you're in it.
That's fair. And like you said, it's the liminal. It's, you know, the in-between space. Most things are not black and white. So at the end of the day, I mean, is there a right choice? Again, right is subjective. Right to one person is not right to another. And right in one situation is not right in another.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it goes, and I say it all the time when I'm training people at the job, when I hire people in. You know, I'm going to give you this manual, and I'm going to tell you how to follow it verbatim, but there are going to be situations that this manual will not help you, and you will have to make a judgment call. And you are going to make the wrong one sometimes. You just need to make sure that you're trying to make the right, most judgment call that you can at any given time. As long as you're doing the best that you can do and, you know, trying your hardest to help people in every situation, then that's all I can ask of you because you're fucking human. But that's what it boils down to is, I think the reason I wanted to do something like this is because I've seen a lot of things lately that just morally have just kind of like rocked me to my core. Some of the decisions that people make because of the reasons that they make them. That's what I want to know. I want to know why people make these kind of decisions. And a lot of it fits into, you know, the true crime world because a lot of the decisions that we would consider are immoral are illegal. I mean, in some areas and things. So like, you know, what justifies it? What is the means that justifies the end?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, and I agree very strongly with, you know, complicity, or what is it? Compliance is complicit. You know, just not doing anything is worse. I think that, you know, the whole two evils and the thing, like you guys said before, if you're complicit, you've done more evil because you could have changed something. I do think that in most scenarios is very, very true. I hold myself to that category in a lot of things, but like you guys said earlier, there's so many different black and white things that create your moral fibers to be torn. You just got to do the best you can in every situation.
Agreed.
We is all human, except for Kristen. She's one of those lizard peoples.
All right, so we should take this moment to thank our lovely guests. Our wives.
The wives.
My wife. Thank you guys for joining us. This was enlightening.
Thank you guys for being a part of our journey. If you guys have any moral questions that you would want to be tossed our way, put it on the podcast chat, the message board. What is it they can send? You can send messages?
Email?
Yeah. The voicemail thing.
Oh, yeah. I'll put a link to the voice messages that you can leave in the podcast description. You can write us emails, lawlessheathenspodcast@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. You can tweet at us at lawlessheathens. You can slide into our DMs on Instagram at lawlessheathens.
Mm-hmm. Just literally anywhere that we have a platform, you can get a hold of us somehow.
Yeah. Bombard us with your feelings. Mm-hmm. We're also, I know we mentioned in the last episode, we are still working on a website. Hopefully that'll be up fairly soon.
And we do have an updated holiday-themed icon.
Holiday
logo.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Chrysler.
Merry Christmas.
Happy Hanukkah.
Happy Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa. Do you remember that old commercial? It was an old Navy commercial.
Yes.
And it was amazing. Happy Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa to you. It was so good.
Love that.
I was very young when that came out.
What is it called?
Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa.
That is a mouthful.
It is.
Sounds like you have a mouthful of peanut butter.
It's so inclusive. It's so great. Happy Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa to everyone.
Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa.
We do have a very like Christmas themed thumbnail, but we're trying to be festive.
It has the holiday spirit. No sort of denomination.
No. It's just like Christmassy.
It has a bell.
Jeez. Garland.
Garland. And some...
Santa hat.
Yeah. So I guess maybe. Chris Mahana Kwanzaa. Say that 10 times fast.
Chris Mahana Kwanzaa. All right, friends. Thanks for joining us. We are back on our normal schedule after going on vacation, so don't worry about us taking a hiatus anytime soon. We'll be back next week.
Absolutely. Go out there and be moral heathens, but do it lawlessly.
Oh, my God. All right. Bye.
Bye. Bye.